Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast monthly album roundup for the month of April 2020. I'm your host Robert, and some of us struggled to become a meme in our lifetime, but Elon Musk's child was born a meme. That kid is gonna fucking hate his parents when he grows up. And with me, I have...
Pop quiz, who am I? Ah, Nathan, it's a friend! What the fuck, Wes Scantlin?
And...
You know, fuck it, my name is now A24.
Sweet, does that mean you know where to hook me up with like a Criterion Edition Blu-ray of The Lighthouse or something?
Or a 4K version of Uncut Gems?
I can do that in a 4K version of Good Time.
Excellent. I love when a plan comes together. So, anyway, here we are with our usual monthly business for the roundup of April 2020. And, yeah, there were still albums coming out, although the Lord knows how many people are actually listening and buying to, given that, you know, sales figures are down. Apparently Spotify is losing money. Shit, even the... If you look at, like, the charts, like, yeah, sure, there's still albums charting, but their sales figures are not nearly as high up as people probably wish they are.
It's how else are we going to get number one albums from DaBaby and... What's the guy's full name? Young Boy Never
Young
Broke
Boy
Again?
Never Broke Again.
What kind of name even is that? It's not a name, it's a sentence. Not even a sentence, it's a sentence fragment.
No, I'll tell you, he did short. I'll tell you, it's on short the Young Boy NBA,
which is also stupid.
Look, I figured he probably thought it was either that or he had to call himself Guapdad 5000.
That's actually more respectable than five random words in a sentence fragment to put together, or whatever the hell Grimes' kid's name is.
Is that some shit
what
you typed on Wingdings? What
do you see in him, Grimes? Good lord.
I don't...
The sex cannot be that amazing. Come on. But, yeah, so... Anyway, with, of course, the past month happening, we might as well talk about, you know, the usual business, starting with what the heck actually did come out this past month. Starting with the general rock, indie, folk, country, etc., all that stuff. So, we had a new project from Dance Gavin Dance with Afterburner, a new project from electronic rock act Enter Shikari with Nothing Is True and Everything Is Possible, a new project from country legend Willie Nelson with First Rose of Spring, a new one from indie artist Anna Birch with If You're Dreaming, The Strokes coming back with their newest album The New Abnormal, a surprise drop from Punk Icons X with Alphabet Land, and the latest recipient of the not good treatment, Danzig, with Danzig Sings Elvis.
Oh.
Just let it sink in.
It's just sad now.
And now we move on to the realm of metal and hardcore, where we of course had the newest album from a metal act Trivium with What the Dead Men Say, a new project from Catatonia with City Burials, the newest one from Thrash Metalers Warbringer with Weapons of Tomorrow, the new project from post-metal act Ulcerate with Stare Into Death and Be Still, a new one from psychedelic prog rockers Elder with Omens, a new project from Abysmal Dawn with Phylogenesis, the newest album from death metal act Like Rats with Death Monolith, the return of Nightwish with Human Nature, Jared Alonji getting back into the parody game with a new Vermicide Violence album, The Praxis of Prophylaxis. Metalcore act August Burns Red with their newest album, Guardians. Thrash metal act Testament with their newest album, Titans of Creation. And the much-anticipated return of the Black Dahlia Murder with Verminous. Now into the realm of hip-hop, R&B, jazz, etc. We had the newest album from Quale Chris alongside rapper Chris Keys with Innocent Country 2. A new project from Westside Gunn with Pray for Paris. The newest album from R.A. The Rugged Man with All My Heroes Are Dead. Shabazz Palaces are back with The Dawn of Diamond Dreams. Avant-garde R&B artist Ives Tumor with their newest album Heaven to a Tortured Mind. Thundercat with his newest album It Is What It Is. A new mixtape from Tory Lanez with The New Toronto 3. Young Boy Never Broke Again, speaking of, with a new project called 38 Baby 2. The newest album from Tech N9ne with Enterfear, and the newest studio album from DaBaby with Blame It On Baby. And now in the realm of pop and electronic, there's the new AWOL Nation album Angel Miners and the Lightning Riders, a newest album from synth-pop act Purity Ring with Womb, producer Steve Aoki with Neon Future 4, and a surprise drop from Fiona Apple with Fetch the Bolt Cutters. So, yeah, again, still stuff to listen to, maybe not as packed as we would have liked it to. There were a good handful of albums that were supposed to come out this month that got delayed because of the thing. But we might as well take care of our usual business here. So, of course, as always, we throw it over to Alex to get the ball rolling here.
Yeah, and first, I just want to mention that Kendrick Lamar was an answer on Millionaire just now, so that's pretty cool. And secondly, I'm doing things a little bit differently to try and avoid overlap. I'm not going to go too deep into some of the albums because I know you guys will probably do all the heavy lifting. So I'm going to venture off into other territories. And oh boy, I hope it pays off in the end because I stepped on a big landmine for this month. That being said, yeah, let's talk about Fiona Apple, Fetch the Bolt Cutters. This, I can't say it came out of nowhere. We've heard rumblings that a new album was in the works. We just didn't know when. And then it came out, and everybody just sort of creamed their pants over it. And this album gave me a bit of a challenge, in a way, trying to figure out its near-universal acclaim and whether or not it's really indicative of its contents. The best way I can describe this album, it's a mix of art pop with jazz and folk. I like to call Fiona Apple as the Gen X Janis Joplin. I'm sure you all know the moment from the 96 VMA. She's up on stage saying, "This world is bullshit," you know, that speech, which, yeah, she was ahead of the time, wasn't she?
Classic.
Oh, God, yeah. So, yeah, this album, it's, I'm not sure what I was expecting because I'm not super familiar with Fiona Apple, but this really wasn't what I was expecting. Both its title track and Under the Table, they're brimming with a very laid-back, minimalist approach of sarcasm and spunk, structured with a sonic landscape of laid-back club jazz. You know, the kind of jazz that you'd hear in a smoky nightclub at, like, 2 o'clock in the morning with people in fancy suits. You know, like in the 1950s, when it was okay to smack your kids with a stick. Isn't that right, Dean Martin? Was that Bing Crosby? I get him confused, but yeah. This is, more than anything, definitely an album for Fiona Apple fans first, which does bring in a layer of difficulty for someone like me who isn't as familiar with her early work, but it is very on brand for her to release a new album when the world is, as she said at 96 VMA's, bullshit. The track Ladies, a little too repetitive for my liking, but it is much more of an empowerment anthem than any fight song could ever be. Yeah, Shamika is someone we can all use in our lives. We all need a Shamika to prop us back up. And the closing track, On I Go, it ends the album off with, of all things, a pulsing jungle groove. It's weird, but I like it. Again, that critical reception, that's what interested me the most about this. When your album opens with a 100 score on Metacritic and gets a 10 from Pitchfork of all places, that's more than enough to get my curiosity piqued. And while I don't hear this album as the be-all testament of perfection that many have claimed it to be, I can still appreciate it for the wild ride that it is, and that's probably enough for me. It's a good album. I'd go out of my way to check it out. And, yeah, you might be surprised with what you'll find in there. It's pretty good.
I didn't even know Pitchfork knew what tens were.
Yeah, it was given some certain albums a 4 point something out of 10. We never forget.
No. No, we don't. All right. Next up in here is something I found while scouring through the internet for albums to take a look at. Thank you, NPR, for this one. The debut solo album from EOB, Earth. EOB is, of course, Ed O'Brien, the guitarist of Radiohead. This is an electronic alt-rock trip, if there ever was, and this was an album that was basically willed into existence out of a sense of necessity, to see through it, to have it made. Shangri-La, the opening track, it sets the mood with a very solid alternative rock soundscape carrying through into the ephemeral mini-epic of Brazil that takes a journey of its own, kind of like the journey that Mr. O'Brien went through before this album was actually made. He spent a year in Brazil. It ranges from solo acoustic guitar to a pulsing drum and bass groove to full-on electronica. So if any of those things are your thing, you might like this album. It's very laid back. It's the kind of alternative rock that knows how to form a pulse and expand on its bass root into something more atmospheric. And personally, I like this more than that latest Thom Yorke solo offering, just saying. There's a little more meat on this plate, what I'm trying to say, with a few standout tracks being Banksters and Olympic, coming out of nowhere like it's some early 90s U2. While the rest of the chunk of the album serves as a nice look back at what Radiohead of olden times was all about. Stuff like from OK Computer and Kid A and God Help Me, The Bends. But yeah, it's a pretty solid album. It's all right. I have three albums here that I can't talk too much about because I know you will, obviously. So enjoy my quick thoughts on the following. This new album from the Black Dahlia Murder, Verminous. This is gnarly and heavy as all hell and all kinds of evil. And it's like potato chips. I can't get enough of it. I want more. It's very good. It's fantastic. And it's selling pretty well, too.
Yeah, apparently on the Billboard Top Albums charts, the one that marks, like, pure sales, it ranked ahead of The Weeknd's After Hours.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Pretty good album. Very nice, quick burst of gnarly, evil hell. And it smells like a sewer for some reason. All right. Now for Afterburner from Dance Gavin Dance. And seeing how the dumbass from Trapped is beefing with this band and everyone else, really, why not give this a listen? And it's like if Pliny and Every Time I Die made an album together, combining two totally different styles into one. It's all right, but it may not be everyone's cup of tea. A little too frantic for its own good.
I mean, if it's pissing off the guy from Trapped, now I have to listen to it.
Yeah, well, everything does, really. But, yeah. And now for another critical darling, the latest from Trivium, What the Dead Men Say. I was crossing my fingers for this album, and with the whole album here, I can safely say, it's all right. It's very solid and tight. It doesn't wander too far off course. It's probably one of the most consistent metal albums I've heard in a while. It's very solid bass line all throughout its runtime. Nine is a very strong intro track, even if the track it leads into is still kind of disjointed. Bleed Into Me has a great bass intro and a really catchy chorus, like I'll admit. And both Amongst the Shadows and Bending the Arc have, they're abbreviated titles, by the way, have some of the heaviest grooves I've heard from Trivium in quite some time. So, good stuff. Now, let's hope that the world can get back on course. That way we don't have to rely on internet streams of concerts, because it's just not the same, But I'm sure Matt Keefe's got his Twitch side hustle going strong in the meantime.
Do what you gotta do.
I had to take a sip because I've been dreading this. but it's something that I have to do. I'm about to do something very, very unhealthy and stupid.
Uh-oh.
Let it be known that I'm talking about this one album in particular to purge my conscience of having to deal with this genre for several years because members of my family are really into it. Oh, God damn it. Sam Hunt, Southside.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Yeah. This is not very good, but I have way too many notes here, but I gotta get through it all. Okay. It's pretty patently obvious how much the bigwigs in Nashville love to reward their, their very chosen assembly of good old boys with the world and riches and shove everyone who goes outside of their norm to the realm of Blackball's obscurity. Casey, Brandy. Where did that come from? And in the horrible, horrible, horrible world of bro country, a few names are quite prevalent in the popular focus. Kane Brown, Luke Combs, Eric Church, yes, even Florida Georgia Line. And then we come to Sam Hunt, practically the poster child of the subgenre. And as much as I would love to call this album as the final nail in the coffin for bro country, we all know that that's not going to happen. Because despite being a snapbeat plague in the music world, it's going to take nothing less than a gigantic music row scandal with all the big names involved to take everything down. Because it's just, it's so friggin' terrible. If you want a more detailed take, watch the Spectrum Pulse review on the album, but in the meantime, here's what I have to say on this colossal mess of a project. Now, despite my not being a 20-something blonde white woman living in suburbia and pretending to be country strong, I am not a big fan of this genre of music. Shocking, I know. 2016 opens things up, and it's a very slow acoustic ballad of Sam going, "Oh, I was wrong, and girl, you know, I'm sorry for 2004. Oh, wait, wrong song.
What?
It's just a typical, if I could fix things, I would kind of song with that one particular year as the focus. It's corny, it's cheesy, it's filled with so much, oh, feel sorry for me kind of dread that feels really inauthentic. That whole thing was just so I can make that joke in reference because, oh, that's a weird song. And then, how about some trap beats in your country twang, y'all? Hard to forget. Way, way, way too trap heavy and drink heavy. With fantastic lines of, "You've got a cold heart and the cold heart's truth. I got a bottle of whiskey, but I got no proof." Get it? It's a dad joke.
Oh, God. Yeah. I've seen dads try harder than that, though. What the fuck?
Yeah, and I continue with, "That you showed up tonight in that dress just to mess with my head. Screw you too, you creep." Ugh. Yeah. And it's only amplified further on the next track, "Kinfolks," with Sam talking about, "Oh, baby, I know we just met, but you should come to my hometown and meet my parents." It's even creepier when you think of this album as conceptual of sorts, with a narrative going through it about this guy going after a woman like the douchiest romantics you've ever seen outside of a dive bar, and I'll get to why that doesn't work either later. Young Once is, as our friend in Spanish Love Song would say, just a nostalgia song with no real meaning to it. But that's the prelude to something much worse.
Gulp.
Remember 2017?
Oh, no.
"Body Like a Back Road."
That's on there?
More on that in a moment, but yeah, let's see. We have snap beats, a terribly cliche chorus hook, and pretty bad lyrics written about Sam's then-wife-to-be. It's not charming, it's just disturbingly uncomfortable, especially in hindsight. This isn't cute, this isn't sexy, it's just bad. It's really bad. That Ain't Beautiful starts with that terrible gimmick of Sam doing spoken word with no flow, at all. It's, I hate it. I hated it on Take Your Time, and I hate it with this. And this song is also akin to that of Treat You Better, as it's all about how he's such a great guy, and that guy you're with, oh no, babe, he's a piece of shit. You should dump him and get with me instead.
All the red flags.
Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah. It's going to get worse. Let It Down has an abominable combination of banjo licks and trap beats, something that only focus test groups would only would ever think to be a good idea and not, you know, real humans. Downtown's Dead, Nothing Lasts Forever. Just repeat what I said about 2016. More of that, oh, woe is me, I'll change things if I can crap, only this time it's about Sam's partying habits. As you see, he's got a problem. And then we come to Sinning With You, a song so full of itself and shoved up its own ass with a pretty awful puritanical tone to it, and here's from just the first verse. Your body was baptized, so disenfranchised. I was your favorite confession. My past was checkered. Your spotless record was probably in jeopardy. Your place or my place, his grace and your grace felt like the same thing to me.
Disenfranchised?
The cherry on top of this is in the chorus. I never felt like I was sinning with you. Always felt like I could talk to God in the morning. I knew that I would end up with you. Always felt like I could talk to God in the morning. If it's so wrong, why did it feel so right? If it's so wrong, why did it never feel like sinning with you? Again, I know I'm not the target audience for this kind of music, but speaking critically, this is all kinds of detestable. It's so full of a holier-than-thou demeanor that it just comes off more like gaslighting than waxing poetic of the joys of pleasure and God being one and the same.
Oh, so he's basically country Drake.
Just a reminder, this is the kind of music that's being pushed out to the masses from Nashville. And if you win Album of the Year, you get blackballed. Isn't that right, Casey?
Oof.
Yeah, it's awful. But we're not done, because we have one more spoken word pondering of today's society with a statement of breaking up was easy in the 90s. Okay, one, who cares? Two, I mentioned this a while ago, but in the documentary included in the new reissue of the Porcupine Tree album In Absentia, Stephen Wilson mentions how a strong track flow can make an album that much better. And with how slapdash the tracks on this album have been placed, there is just no form of progression to be found. We're going from an upbeat party track to a downbeat acoustic ballad to a love song to a bar song again. It's just all over the place. Case in point, we're going from a bar song to a hangover song with Drinking Too Much, with more of those spoken word laments. And it's also 3 years old.
Damn.
This is a track that was uploaded to SoundCloud at the start of 2017, and it's the closing song of his second album in 2020. Mm. This and Body are practically the only reasons why this album even exists in the first place. It's a project that had built up to completion over a span of 3 years. And in all honesty, this is just an absolute disaster and train wreck of an album. There's just no cohesion, no flow, no consistency. It's just an overly focus grouped 40-minute mess of bro country schlock that is, from start to finish, a shining example of why this subgenre just flat out sucks. There's no net positive to it outside of getting all those 20 and 30-something blonde women out to the line dancing bar so they can play cowgirl for a night. Or for overly clingy guys to head to the bar, buy a pass-through blue ribbon, and just hit on women before getting kicked in the dick for how poorly they treat and view women. Kind of like how this album views women as an attainable prize to be won back with pleas of, I can change, I swear, I promise. This album is bad. It's really bad. To all the reviews out there praising it for giving such raw authenticity and emotion, take a look at Fiona Apple's album, how that came to be. Compare it to this. There's going to be a disconnect. Because this is just... Fuck this album. Really hard. Ugh.
You need a drink, man?
I got it right here. I got my fantastic Mountain Dew Baja Blast Zero Sugar to keep me going.
So I'm guessing that's it from you?
That's it. That's all. That's as much as I can do.
All right. So after that little tirade again, seriously, that almost waited 3 fucking years. Anyway, now we move on to the middle portion of this podcast, which is, of course, all Mark talk. So you have the floor. Tell us about some albums you were listening to.
Yes. This month was actually pretty well, from last month. Because I have no low lights to speak of because I didn't figure any bad albums at least that month. But I will do some different. I'll start from small to big. I want to get to the ones I into last. I just want to get to some little ones out the way. Let's start off with this dude, the Baby album, Blame It On Baby. And I gotta say, it's the Baby album with the Baby songs, which he raps, has a good flow, has a lot of chemistry, and that's what it is. Like, it's like the songs aren't really interesting. Like, his rapping is, but it's just like just sort of like the same shit we got from his previous album. It's like, I mean, I know I heard it's basically a rush job here just to get another album going, but I mean, I didn't hate it. I just thought it's very, 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 very mid. Like, very mid. Like, I think this one song he's trying to sing, and I don't think he'd do that well. I guess he wanted to get album just since he wanted to keep money flowing, because I don't know. I don't know if he's doing well or not. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. But yeah, like the song's pretty broad. The features are pretty blah as well. Like, I mean, come on, you got people like Quavo, Future, got Young Boy Never Broke Again. Also, A Boogie with the Hoodie. There's one track with Ashanti and Megan Thee Stallion on there, which it's decent. It's decent. Like, but yeah, I just say like it is basically a, you know, just make this happen, like, pretty quick. Just get the streaming. So I don't know, just some shit. Like, I'm not gonna blame him for just like get some shit out. But it's not really one I say, oh hey, turn the album back on again. It's like, I mean, he did what he did, but I wouldn't recommend it. Like, I don't know, I don't think it's special to recommend it either. But that's just me. Just this album is. It's sort of funny the name of the album called Blame It On Baby, because, I mean, I do kind of blame it on you, it's just not an interesting album. It ain't terrible, it just, I just, I just won't go back to it as much. Okay, and we have an EP I want to talk a little about from Kelly Uchis. She has an EP out titled To Feel Alive, a 10 minute EP. Like I said, the number say here is like it's very look what I heard from my last album, which you go it's very dreamy sounds, very you know very dreamy R&B type shit sounds, but you know with a voice incorporated. And like it's pretty good listen. I say it's worth your 10 minutes. I mean it's a gift from it, but yeah that one's pretty that EP's pretty okay. And now an album that I don't know, I heard some acclaim from this album because I watched a video of one track from this artist once that I thought, let's check this one out. It's from this artist, I might fuck this name up. Reina Sawayama.
Oh yeah, her.
Yeah, with her I'm guessing debut album. Sawayama. I'm good. If I fuck your name, I'm sorry if I fuck up your name. So yeah, I thought check this album out because I saw one of the videos for Shut the Fuck Up, is a good bop. It has this, like, I know I heard she's, you know, she has this usually pop R&B blend, but this one is a bit more of a nu metal type of shit spin to it, like something like it. Like, I gotta say the shit kind of bops to me. Like, yeah, I kind of like what she I was gonna see what is about, and I gotta say it's pretty interesting, at least for what I go into. Like, even though I'm not much of a pop guy. I mean, if I like it, I like it. But if it says like I should check it out, but yeah, like it has some things tells about herself. Like, she does, you know, in her background, which, you know, she is she's Japanese and British. It's about her, about her family shit going on, like the femininity. And this one song, "Comme des Garçons" or "Like the Boys," which looks like about femininity and toxic masculinity. Which okay, I can get down with this. And of course, she has one song called SX, which does do a topic of, you know, our favorite topic of as of late, the world being fucked over. Like, seriously, it's about something that mass capitalism as a sinking world, about, you know, giving out all about global climate change and human extinction, which is a possibility. And she's not wrong, and also talk about the Australian wildfires that happened a while back, in case you forgot how fucked up this year has been. But yeah. Like, I gotta say, this album is okay. A couple of times, but this album is, I say, it's a pretty interesting. It's an interesting listen. It does get me into what she thinks about, which it got a very good dynamic pop sound, which I got into a little bit. This a bit mixing up, like she got some pop shit going on, some R&B stuff going on, and a bit of new metal shit, which I kind of I'm interested in. I want to say this, it's like housey, but better and more interesting, and less boring.
So now I have to listen to this.
I say this album's pretty, this is pretty interesting to listen to, and I'm really digging between for the past two seasons, but yeah, it's pretty good. Y'all should check it out if you have the time for it. Okay, next up we got another one that I'm not gonna have too much on because I don't know what I have to say about it. It's Corley Chris and Chris Keys with Insta Country 2. Even though he's why I say mostly because it is to an album that I ain't listened to yet. Like this is the first one. Like, I will say this is a different jump considering the previous projects I haven't listened to is mainly, you know, got some type of subject matter, which, you know, guns, was talking about, you know, guns and everything's fine, talking about, you know, all that shit. And but yeah, this is basically it is more of a blissful, melancholic sounding project, which okay, I gotta dig some sounds to it. Like, it is a very long ass project. It's a very long project of his. Like, it's like an hour 3 minutes, which okay. I mean, it's not a complaint, just like, wow, this is long. at the track listing, you got like both the intro and outro like going back to back, and then the last track is just called like credits. Like, okay, it's kind of funny with that listing, but yeah, like some of the songs I got, like, I mean, it's what you said, Curly Chris. If you listen to him, like, if you listen to him, like, you know to expect from this guy, and of course, he got some interesting features, which he got people, at least people whose names I do not know, or at least look up. Like, I know, like, this one guy, Merle Garbus, is from Toon Yards, I believe.
Yes, she is.
Yes, I want to say that you got Billy Woods, you got Denmark Vesey, and of course some Earl Sweatshirt who appear on the track Mirage, which, okay, that one's very good too. I like the track Sacred Safe, which got this very good soul, like this good soul sound and shit to it, which I always like that shit in there. But yeah, I'll say it's nothing I heard before from Curly Chris, maybe because maybe because I probably had that much to say. Like, if you want some good underground hip hop, like, he's the man to go to that. But that's pretty good from Chris Keys as well. Like, yeah, if you want some underground hip hop that, you know, that doesn't get much, no one knows it much. But yeah, this one's right for you. Okay, and now let's see. I got the other four ones that I might have more to say here. Let's talk Shabazz Palaces with their new album, The Dawn of Diamond Dreams. And I gotta say, wow, this is kind of short. Or at least sort of short. I mean, at least in songs like this, man, like, it's like, what, 8 songs, 2 and 2 interludes that are like seconds short. But yeah, I will say this is another project that I got too much to say because it's what I expect from Shabazz Palaces. Like, they always have these... Look, it's a Shabazz Palaces album. You know, they gotta have these word bars that you might try to decipher, but you really can't. I mean, here's the thing: I thought of reviewing this for the site, but then I figured, yeah, you know what? I'm good. You know what? I was gonna take a break from that, or since I don't want to overwork myself. But yeah, what you hear from this album, like, you got some pretty good shit. Like, of course, you got some singles like Fast Learner, which is pretty good. You got the Chocolate Souffle song, which, okay, that's also banging. I will say, there is some more funkier type of shit in there. Like, you got this one track, Bad Bitch Walking, which got this very funky, groovy type of vibe going. Like, even though when I heard her say, he's a bad bitch, bad bitch, bad bitch, bad bitch. I keep thinking, is he singing bad bitch or babish? I'm just picturing this binge with babish. Like, okay.
Hello, and welcome to Binging with Babish, where today we're going to make chocolate souffle.
but yeah, like I said, with 10 tracks and only clocking in, like, 42 minutes, like, you do. I'm saying right now, if you don't like such a, like, if you liked it by now, you're not gonna like this. But if you have been, you know, with them from at least, I don't know, at least from the start, or at least from you getting into them, like, yeah, you're gonna find this, you're gonna be satisfied with the weird lyrics, as always, and the production, and of course, it's those things that make you want to bop your head. But yeah, I gotta say, we got another decent album from them. Like, I will say I think it's slightly better than the last two albums they did, the Duology, but I still like the other albums, Ledge Majesty. I like that one more, but yeah, this one's a pretty good album too. And now for the one that I hope I got more to say here, because this is one that's definitely on my West Side Gun with Pray for Paris. Oh, yes, he returns with another mixtape, I'm guessing. I don't know what it is, what project. And
who even knows at this point?
Yeah, I mean, hey, he might do another one this year. Like, they've been working. I gotta say, there's basically, I want to say, like, there was a bit of a switch up, at least a little bit, in the other side this time. Like, you still got that dirty street shit that they always bring to, but there is some more joints that got that luxurious kind of classy spoof vibes going on. Like, I will say that one song he did with Wale titled French Toast, I will say that track is, I believe, is for, you know, is for the ladies, which, okay, I get that. I'm gonna say his singing on it was not that good. I mean, at least I don't think he sang that well. I think he's singing like how Freddie Gibbs sang. It's like, it's funny. Like, I'm doing it on purpose. Like, I think he's doing it just on, like, batting on purpose. I don't know his singing voice, but I don't know how much his singing voice is. I mean, should I do it well or not, but it just seems like you're funny, but don't try to sing again. Just saying. And I will say, like, out of production, like, it's the best sound I heard from him since Supreme Blind Tail and Downtown. And I was really feeling this a lot more. It is a lot more, like, especially on the production side, which you got people like The Alchemist producing, DJ Muggs, DJ Premier, and okay. This one track called Versace, which it's got this very quiet gospel side, which this sounds so heavenly. Like, here's the thing. So I guess called Versace. One of the producers, you heard of Jay Versace, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that one kid from Vine with the hair. He produced that. And he made one of the best beats in here. Like, I was shocked, like, this kid, the kid that got that voice, that reminds you of your cousin trying to mess with you, but you kind of want to choke. That little annoying cousin that always bothers you.
Why is your pork cart on the ceiling?
You said bring my grades up. I did see that. Let me.
This guy.
Oh shit! Yeah, that guy.
That guy. He killed on this beat. He fucking nailed it on this. Like, I played this shit so many times. This shit so heavy. This sound fucking heavenly. Like, man, this. Oh yeah, but this kid. Oh yeah, but you know he has a music producer. He got some sunglasses. She's like, wow, man, this kid. What do you know? What do you know? Because at the Vine, you can do some dope shit. He did some dope shit with this. But yeah. That was one thing that kind of knocked me off. Like, okay. I will say features, they're pretty good too. Like, you got like features. Like, okay, like this. Like, this time I expect from there. Like I expect the people. Like, you know, his crew. Like Benny and Conway, of course. Bodie James now says he's part of Griselda now, which they both did good. Freddie Gibbs rocked me out. Freddie Gibbs and Rock Griselda on $500 ounces. That was good on that. There's also one person I didn't expect that. Like, oh, he worked for them, on 327, which he had with Joey Badass and Tyler the Creator. He was on there, and Tyler the Creator got stepped on that. He also produced a track on there too for track called Party with Pop Smoke, which I couldn't tell got something to do with the late era Pop Smoke. I tried to listen to this. I should have looked it up on Genius, but I was too lazy for it. But yeah, like the track this has sort of like a smooth shit sound. But yeah, also get this DJ Premier beat on the song Sean versus Flair, which of course, like, you know, it's I know it's involved like Sean versus Flair, which you know he got the wrestling, you know he. You know, you got the rest of the references in there somehow, but yeah, it sounds like some very good that old DJ Premier production, which okay, got the scratches on shit, like make you wanna bump your head, like it's kinda good, but yeah, I gotta say for Paper Paris, this probably might be it's up there with my favorite solo West Side Gun projects. Like, I say, Supreme Blind Tail is still number one for me. This might be of the number two. Like, the last few projects he did solo, like, with, Fly Guys, Awesome God, man, Hitler vs. Hermes 7, and yeah, there's 8 coming soon, by the way. Yeah, like, those were good, but the latter two kind of got me hooked even more, because it made the sound, like, I will say, like, West Side Gun's a rapper, he's still good, I will say. He does have more features in here. Like he's good, but I think his features does both of them, even though I think he does want to promote his boys more, which I kind of get. You got to respect him for that shit. I mean, he want to promote, like, people like Conway and Benny, and of course now Bodie James as well. Like, you know, you want to promote them well. But yeah, I kind of, you know, I dealt the fuck out of this. And if it's to him, even though I read that he did have COVID, but I think he's doing it right. I hope. Just stay in the house. I don't know. Just do that shit. But yeah, this album is on skin. This is some dope shit. And now, for the last two albums, the ones that actually wrote a review for. First, let's begin with Mr. IS Tumor, Heaven to a Tortured Mind.
Aw, yeah.
Oh yes, you will get into some very like. Okay, like, here's the thing, like, of course, when I heard the last album from his, which Gaspar Rob, it got this very genre-bending experimental album, which combined all sorts of things, like, a trying to trance R&B, and now with this, it's like, there's not an element here that is in here, and that's more of, I want to say, some glam rock, or Britpop, or some of that shit there, but yeah, like, you got that shit with a gospel for a new century. You got a new century, which got all the home drum singles kicked in. Like I'm digging this. And of course, Kerosene. Which, yeah, it's just again that song just oozes everything sexy. Everything about it just says this is fucking sexy. Like it has the wrong energy of a Prince track. In fact, moving to remind me of Prince lately, either that or the one episode of Listeners that aired recently. But yeah, this is just something you want to make love to over and over and over again. And of course, you got more tracks that got that more, you know, that more glam rock, bohemian soul, R&B sound in there. Like, this one track, Half Dallin Nights, which has this very psychedelic tone, which, okay, like it's, I know it's like 2 minutes. It just goes like, it feels like you're like smoking weed in there. You're like you're listening to shit. Like it's just so kind of like very, you know, mellow, very mellow. Like and that goes to stuff. The tracks like Strawberry Privilege, which also got the 77, and the two part of track, Romanticist and Dream Palette. And Dream Palette got that more, you know, electric rock sound, and with Superstars, which got that power rock vibes, which, okay, when the drums and some guitars come together, it just hit like, gonna be the superstar, that's just fucking beautiful, like, this is, yeah, this is another album that this dude done again, he just put everything in a ball, just put glam rock in there, R&B in there, soul in there, Britpop in there, just twist that shit and made it into a beautiful sounding album. Like, this is the shit that I like. This is a musical heaven to me. Like, he like, yeah, like yeah, it's just so fucking good. And yes, I noticed that they used Gospel for a New Century in that one promo for that episode of Paranoid Agent. I didn't forget. I knew that. What's that sound? Oh, they use the apes too. Yeah. In case no one got that,
because Adult Swim knows what's up.
Yeah, but yeah, like I said, this album is fucking good. Check it out. This album is fucking better. And since we're Adult Swim and anything, it's since now time for the last album, and we all know what album that is. Yes,
it is one, what it is.
The one and only Thundercat. It is what it is. Yes. Gal, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, weaves and weebets. Damn. Yes. Yes. This week returns with, I will say, like, of course, with Austin Thundercat's, since the last album, which he's gone to some shit, or at least gone to some thinking about some shit, like, of course, like, everything instrumentally, I'm gonna say, like, it just sounds so great. Like the older track, Lost in Space, Great Scott, 2226. That's a mouthful of titles. It begins like a grand space opera, where he goes to this most state of he's feeling lost or alone, or but he knows that he's never alone. But you know, he got that he has that film of just being his head thinking was, you know, that very that makes like we all know that shit from, we all know that shit. Of course, that continues with the Interstellar Love, which has this jazz, which has that, you know, continues with that jazz-fused cosmic sound, which complimented help with the success with little help from Kamasi Washington with that very sweet saxophone solo. And oh boy, this is some weak shit. It's not something you hear out of Cowboy Bebop. A spoiler, I'm gonna keep saying anime shit for this review because that's what it is. I mean, you forgot you got me Dragon Ball Durag.
How you like me in my durag?
And of course, okay, and we'll say, since I mentioned anime themes a lot, I said this in review that the next track, I Love Lewis Cole, sounds like an anime theme. But the more I listen to it right now, and the more I listen to it, it's not like a theme for Sonic the Hedgehog. Cause the way the beat was going, it's not like something I would hear in a Sonic game. Like I don't know if it was just me, I just can't think of that a lot. Oh, and yes, it's meant to Lewis Cole, features Lewis Cole as well, which I'm guessing he's like Thundercat's stunt double or worse double, cause I keep trying to find him on the track, like, I guess it's him, but yeah. And of course, went to the other single, Black Qualls, which this time the album version, which features Childish Gambino, which of course his verse is talking about being watched. Like we don't talk, then we feel safe. Each one of us with tiny screens. I've been running like a soul. Woo, like all that, like all that shit. Like his verse is pretty good in here. Pretty good there. I wish it was on the single version, but okay. And of course, you got some previous singles that are released on this. Like you got King of the Hill was on here, which was part of that Brain Feeder X collection back a couple years ago with Batman Not Good on it. Which of course that song is still good. And of course the one song that we've all been waiting for since last year. I don't quite love the full version of it. You know, the song from Carol Tuesday, which now is like three minutes, and it sounds, it sounds just as grievous before as I listened to it the first time, now longer and better. And of course, if you know Thundercat a lot, you know the one topic he's not gonna leave off. You know he's Mac Miller. With the song Fair Chance, which, you know, which of course talks about how when Mac passed, how everybody just rather like how could you believe this man was gone? Like he, you know, with him gone, like how he talked about that. Like and of course him with Ty Dolla $ign and Little B himself. And it was kinda good. It was the album is a lot mixed up, like you get the funny shit in there, you also get the more, you know, thoughtful heart, like awful kind of serious shit. Like you get a lot of sass out of Thundercat. You get the jokey side of it, and then you get like this very emotional side of him. Like even on Little B's verse of here, which he says, "My emotions give me some of that potion. No, my heart's not broken, but I feel like it's open. Please, somebody do surgery. Tell the doctor to come work for me. I'll keep looking at my soul, praying only God knows I've been working 9 to 9." And I will say the ending track pays homage to Mac as well, because I think I heard him whisper on the last track, like, "Hey Mac," and something like that. Like it's very kind of quiet. But yeah. Like this is a very, you know, very strong, you know, love and loss to goofy shit. The fun, having fun. Like yeah. This is a good Thundercat. I will say it's fairly kind of short too. Like his last album was like, I mean, I will say it's kind of short. Well, I think I know shorter than Drunk, or at least it doesn't have much, you know, just 1 minute tracks that I felt could have been longer, but it actually does like keep it good and tight, and yeah, and if it's just right, I'm fitting for the times we face now. Like we need a little laughter in our lives with some you know serious shit, but mostly laughter. And Thundercat gave us that gift, and we thank you for it.
Anyway, now that that's out of the way, we throw it over to me to round things out with a whole bunch of albums. These first two, of course, as always, starting with my top picks. And these first two will be getting out of the way pretty quickly because, again, Mark literally just talked about them. First up, Ives Tumor, Heaven to a Tortured Mind. Yes, this album has the most raw sexual energy that you will hear outside of the discography of Prince. I mean, shit, Gospel for a New Century still fucking hits with, like, that smooth, sensual R&B vibes to the vocals and lyrics, the grooving bass, and still working in his tendencies towards noise with a lot of that loud, blasting buzz in the guitars to add a lot of energy. Medicine Burn continues that, having one of the best drum grooves on the record, coated in plenty of fuzzy psychedelic guitars, building this kind of sonic wall. Kerosene is a bit lighter in like the first half or so before, you know, it swells up to like that sweet 80s glam rock solo. Kind of like in a vaguely Thundercat-ish way. A lot of the tracks are pretty brief, like minute and a half, 2 minutes sort of things, but there's these satisfying experiences like Romanticist and Dream Palettes. But these songs kind of segue into each other in a way that almost kind of feels like the montage to A Long Night of Romantic Lovemaking. The track Folly Impossible definitely feels like it's the most indebted to previous releases, with kind of like a lot of drone and a lot more noise, especially with the way that like the mixing kind of throws in a lot of randomly chopped up bass synths and guitar lines in a very stuttery, off-kiltery sort of way. Seriously, Prince would be absolutely proud that this album exists, and I look forward to all the children that are going to be born from the quarantine from listening to this album. And then, of course, the other one being, you know, good old Thundercat with It Is What It Is. Exactly what I need to lift my mood during this plague. Some of that sweet, sweet, smooth, you know, kind of R&B, funk, soul, jazz, mixed with a lot of immature Adult Swim style humor from everyone's favorite weeb-ass place bass player. Although it does kind of start off on a poetic note with that mouthful intro track and that soulful kind of spacey jazz fusion piece Interstellar Love with that great saxophone work, the intricate drum grooves, and of course his great bass playing, with some brief lyrics about, you know, finding love that extends beyond the scope of our galaxy and everything. And then immediately hard swerving into I Love Lewis Cole, which kind of has sort of a vaguely punk-ish D-beat sort of thing that almost kind of calls to mind that time he had a stint in suicidal tendencies. It's true, look it up. Where basically the lyrics are like, you know, him trying to remember what the hell happened during a party that he went to. And, you know, it's Lewis Cole reminding him like, yeah, I remembered you were punching my friends, made an oil spill that made Exxon offended. Then you fell asleep in the laundry in my room. Yeah, you know how they say if you can't remember the party, that's how you know it was a good party? I feel like Thundercat genuinely doesn't remember shit, and it was the best party. And of course you got Funny Thing, which is a similar sort of party jam about trying to hook up with a chick there. Of course you have that slick 70s funk with Black Qualls and fucking songs like House Sway, which is the album's obligatory, hey, let me flex how cool of a bass player I am kind of solo jam there. Then you have the moments of genuine seriousness, like, you know, the aforementioned Mac Miller tributes there with those two songs. And, of course, like, Miguel's Happy Dance, which is a song about, like, putting on a false sense of joy to work through your problems and stress in life and never confronting them head on, which, dude, seriously, just at me next time. And speaking of that, there's also a track like King of the Hill, which has lyrics that are kind of more serious about like chastising those who seek a lot of superficial momentary satisfaction at the expense of anything more substantial or fulfilling in life. And then of course you have an appearance from Zach Fox randomly on the track, you know, like just giving this weird like airplane flying landing message, you know, before segueing into Dragon Ball Durag, which still is the best bop on the record, because come on, who hasn't tried to impress a girl while smelling like cat hair? I still smell good. But yeah, this album kind of is exactly what the mood feels like at the time. Everything is tragic, heartbreaking, but also kind of absurd and hilarious. Just emotions of life, and Thundercat captures that vibe perfectly. And now time to move into the other things that have not been mentioned here. So starting here with this Like Rats album, Death Monolith, something I checked out pretty much on a whim based on a recommendation from mutual friend of the podcast, Ryan Panny, because he was talking it up like it's some prime-ass death metal shit, and he's right, it absolutely is. This sits squarely within, like, the same realm of that really thickly produced, kind of beefy groove and blast-heavy metal as, like, bands like Tomb Mold or Gatecreeper or Withered. You get that opener World Devourer, which delivers these huge drum grooves, these really gargantuan guitar riffs and spades, pummeling the listener from all corners with a lot of really menacing sounds. Of course, there's a lot of blast beats thrown in there as the song kind of picks up momentum between groove and just blasting deathy metal in there. Ash and Rain continues that vibe with a lot of, with this very slow, monstrous onslaught that starts out like that, then slams on the pedals to drive fucking into your ears like a goddamn musical steamroller. Foul Wind just stomps full steam ahead with a lot of that huge, huge groovage. Bellowing vocals bursting forth with a lot of evil intent with these muddy, hellish tremolo riffs. Definitely helped by, like, the excellent production work. It finds that sweet balance between, like, you know, being able to have a lot of body and definition while still having this very brittle, filthy tone. Again, on par with a lot of the best of, like, contemporary death metal. You can also hear it in, like, a lot of the drum work as well. The booming energy of each tom hit while still being able to maintain, like, the clarity and nuance of the cymbal hits and sticking patterns, even as the mix swells with intense energy and noise. Certain other acts could take the hint. But yeah, this is for an underground release that I haven't seen a lot of people talking out, apart from, like, one dude that I know. This is legit, like, just some really prime, like, modern death metal. Like, I highly recommend it. It's some prime shit. And now we move on to the realm of more parody acts, as we have this aforementioned Vermicide Violence album, The Praxis of Prophylaxis, which sees musical comedy YouTuber Jared Lange returning back to his forte of spoofing the bad old days of MySpace deathcore and, you know, Vans Warped Tour metal and all that. And, you know, there is the age-old question of how you're supposed to review an album that's very tongue-in-cheek in nature, because you could say, like, oh, I think it's really funny, but other people would be like, oh, I don't think it's funny at all. Yeah. And, you know, that is a fair point. You know, talking about comedy can be kind of difficult in this context, but, I mean, I could just talk about it on pure music terms, because, like, even if you isolate it just as, like, musically, it just really does slap pretty hard. Like, if nothing else, Jared and his collaborators absolutely know how to bring it when it comes to the music every single time on their albums. The album opener, Exuberant Sputum, about, like, you know, friggin', I think, Black Death, it wastes no time delivering slamming blast beats, gnarly fast riffs, and a lot of extremely satisfying grooves, along with the really gnarly vocals, which on this record are provided by Jake Impelizzeri, who does vocals and plays guitar in a metalcore act called Sleepwaker. I need to check them out sometime. His vocals are pretty good on this. And, yes, you have the follow-up track, A Dyspneic Frenzy, which is a song lyrically about dealing with anxiety, and it does have this very appropriately anxiety-inducing feel to a lot of its rhythms, its guitar leads, its drum work, and, you know, yes, the novelty of someone gutturally growling about how you need to think about happy thoughts like rainbows and kittens and sweets to, you know, calm yourself down from an anxiety attack is pretty amusing, if you ask me. Of course, as the aforementioned, as we talked about before, the album's lead single, Corona Viscerated, about the COVID-19 pandemic, which still slaps pretty hard with a lot of its sick triplet grooves, and of course that closing out segment where he's bashing shithead politicians for not doing their fucking jobs. Goddamn, this fucking play is gonna get us all killed. West of the Nile has this pretty sweet, like, ominous synth intro, and of course this great lyrical shout of fucking bug bites before it segues into the main riff, which is honestly just still one of the funniest parts of the album overall, as it segues into a song about, like, vector-borne disease prevention and how much mosquitoes suck ass, including this really weird bridge where he's just screaming a bunch of shit about random diseases. Even this one really weird passage where he's literally just repeating different kinds of encephalitis, which I'm not even sure how many of these are even real forms of encephalitis. He's even like, did I mention encephalitis? And then just randomly scream shit about encephalitis and mosquitoes being fucking shitheads. Also, let me just say how much I appreciate that this album dropped during Autism Awareness Month, and it has the song Concentrated Shots of Pure Autism about the importance of vaccinating your fucking kids, Karen. Seriously, he says it himself in the song that if you don't get your kids vaccinated, they basically become like these fucking bioweapons, like fucking umbrella research labs of pure disease. It's fucking terrifying. And of course, you get to have the vague satisfaction of hearing Trump's, you know, vaccine bullshit on full display, like it makes any sort of sense. It looks like it was meant for a horse. Bitch, shut up. Of course, the track, here's a throwaway observation. Ginger Vitriolic is a song that sounds a lot like it's riffing on the style that Whitechapel embodied on The Valley, you know, that more nuanced, melancholic, softer style of deathcore, while coincidentally also being just long enough to actually brush your teeth according to recommended guidelines, which is appropriate since apparently you can actually die because of oral infections from what I've heard, which is a deeply terrifying prospect as someone who drinks way too much soda. Of course, you can't forget that closing song, the deathcore medley Reign of Deafness, a nod to, I believe, Thy Art Is Murder's Reign of Darkness, about how to prevent hearing loss and the importance of, you know, wearing plugs at concerts and shit. It, of course, brings together a lot of classic and more modern deathcore jams in a pretty amazing fashion as usual, interpolating tunes from bands like Carnifex, Old Bring Me the Horizon, The Black Dahlia Murder, apparently, Job for a Cowboy, Oceano, Fit for an Autopsy, Winds of Plague, Suicide Silence, and Whitechapel. Those I immediately noticed on first glance. Chelsea Grin, Veil of Maya, unfortunately, Rings of Saturn. Look, they can't all necessarily be winners, but... yeah, like, basically, as a parody work, it's really funny to me. And just as a straight-up deathcore album in its own right, this is some really spicy shit. Moving on here. This is an album I checked out because I saw, again, a lot of my own, like, mutuals in the local music scene hyping the hell out of it. And I was like, eh, sure, why not? This new Ulcerate project, Stare Into Death and Be Still, which I gotta admit, I've heard a song of theirs here and there, but I can't say I've ever actually listened to one of their albums in full before now. But yeah, honestly, this is some supremely good metal shit. The closest comparison point I can think of that others have pointed out and makes sense to me is the style of death metal pioneers Gorguts, in that from the beginning, you're hit with a lot of like these rhythmically dissonant, very complex riffs, a lot of rapid pounding dense drum rhythms that are very equally off kilter, this generally melodic foreboding ambiance and atmosphere. Seriously, it sounds like there's the sonic equivalent of like a fog that just kind of like coats every second of music in this thick miasma, and of course those really harsh bellowing vocals that, you know, boom and echo outward throughout the rest of the song, like it's shouting at you from deep inside a cave. Much of the album has that very kind of cinematic bent to it, such as Exhale the Ash, with a lot of its tremolo leads and dueling guitar melodies and chord progressions all sweeping across the fretboard and whatnot. The title track is very similarly an expansive set of these harsh, grinding riffs and chords that surprisingly does find time here and there to lay off, you know, the speed and let it more relax, but still incredibly dense set of drum grooves and guitar melodies dominate, giving this really menacing doom and gloom vibe to the proceedings. It also makes a great segue into the following track, There Is No Horizon, which similarly starts off with this very slow, ominous instrumentation, although to be fair, the double kick does pick up on the song pretty fast. There's also a lot of like some clear sort of grunge chorus lead guitar work in there, this during these like bridge parts that are like less obscured by walls of chords and blasting drums, where it's literally just like a break for the guitars to breathe, although all that stuff does come back in eventually. And that is basically the album in a nutshell. It's a lot of, you know, really dense riffs, complex drums, this really just haunting atmosphere that is absolutely firing on all cylinders, from the performance to songwriting to a lot of great production work that just makes it feel as hellish and maddening as it does. I might have to dig into the Ulcerate backlog soon. This is doing it for me. Of course, next up here, the newest project from Elder with Omens, following up on their last full-length album, Reflections of a Floating World, which is where I first jumped in on the Elder backlog. That was a pretty damn good psychedelic prog rock record. And now here we are with the newest project, and as expected, it's another just really great collection of really vibe-heavy rock epics, starting right from the intro with its title track. These really trippy melodic guitar leads, complemented with a lot of thick, crunchy riffs underneath, these slow, steady drum grooves, and a lot of really great violin and string work to complement the melodies and everything, with the song just kind of drifting and, you know, droning as it builds these vibes across 11 minutes, finding room for some more chunkier grooves near the end. Then there's the track In Procession, which similarly builds on these ideas, mainly focusing on the riff side of things to hold things down, with various other musical flourishes that, you know, give it an air of that just trippy psychedelic vibe. Like, if you need a reference point, think like Paul Bearer or something like that. If you need to know their particular approach of like psychedelic prog and like vaguely doomish elements there, I hesitate to use the word doom, but you know, you understand my point. Then, of course, there's the centerpiece of the album for me, and easily its best track, the near 13-minute long Halcyon, which starts off with a lot of these really gorgeous, like, beautiful guitar melodies complemented by a lot of grooving psychedelic synth work before the guitars pick up a bit more in distortion. And even when it's distorted, those crunchy riffs just have, like, a lot of really great complements that they add to the melodies and everything, with the strings building onto the composition in the middle of the track. And just, man, this album is full of, like, just these grand scale rock epics from beginning to end, which is to say nothing of, like, its excellent building grooves and just its musical sonic odysseys and everything. The really dynamic production, the fantastic composition work, the melodies and the playing and everything, it's all just extremely well done. This is a very beautiful album to just, like, vibe out to if you need a rock album that'll do that to you. And now for the opposite of an album you can vibe to, my, of course, most anticipated of the month, and probably one of my most anticipated of the year, definitely, The Black Dahlia Murder, Verminous. 3 years. 3 years it's been since Nightbringers came out. Of course, owing to the fact that there was just a higher demand than usual for Black Dahlia Murder out on the road. It feels like an eternity in their time, but, aw, man, it the wait is always just so supremely worth it, you know. When that album opens with the ominous sounds of, like, dripping water and ominous forest fauna segueing into the pummeling drum assault and the dueling guitar leads and riffs of the opening title track, they seriously have, as always, not skipped a beat. The energy and ferocity is still just completely there, setting the stage for this pure, wicked, evil experience, especially with those solos and blast beats and everything. The track godlessly keeps the momentum going, especially with the really biting growls and gnashing vocals laid down by good old Trevor Strnad, backing up the intense drum beats all across, especially in that back half. Removal of the oak and stake brings these really harsh gallop riffs and kick patterns to drive a good chunk of the song, along with these generally beefy chord progressions that accentuate the drum patterns really well and are really punchy in the mix, especially during the solo part, which has this kind of ominously slowed down kind of guitar lead that lets this guitar rhythm rather that lets the actual leads just shred over top and work their magic. It sounds scarily ritualistic in a way, which is very fitting considering the general aesthetic of the album. When you look at just the artwork alone, that very noxious, like, toxic waste green of the artwork, it sounds like it was conjured in the wilds, crawling out of just this very cursed swamp. Like, definitely something conveyed through, like, the excellent use of guitar interplay and odd rhythms in songs like Child of Night, or with that unnerving sort of chanting choir swelling in the intro of the track Sunless Empire, leading its way to those sick guitar harmonies and those tremolo riffs playing off each other as well, especially with all that sick drum work and the grooves and everything. Alan Cassidy, as always, knows how to fucking beat the shit out of Skins. Oh, and speaking of skin beating, oh fuck, does the Leather Apron Scorn bring that heavy, heavy, steady pounding menace in the drums, the riffs, switching between these slow to mid-tempo steady progressions and then ramping up when needed, especially with that triplet groove switch up in the middle and how it amps the hellish madness further with these sweeps and harmonies, harmonics rather, showcasing the always excellent, not just instrumentation, but also production work. Let it be mentioned here, since this seems to be a recurring topic on the podcast, especially this year, let this album be an object lesson in how to craft an immaculate, dense, harsh, blasting, intense metal mix without having to resort to bullshit audio compression tactics. You know what I mean? It's not that hard. But yeah, just what else is there to say other than the spot has already been cleared on the year-end album chart. It's just a matter of what number, but you know it's going to be there. And now to go into the quick round of various things that I don't have as much to say, starting with this new Warbringer album, Weapons of Tomorrow. Again, not much to add. It's the typical Warbringer style with a lot of really heavy, fast, thrashing riffs, harsh cutting vocals, lots of, commentary on mankind's destructive tendencies. It's as pretty typical modern thrash as you can get, but that's not a bad thing. Far from it. Warbringer very much are content to refine their craft to its peak possible extent. Of course, there's the new Purity Ring album, Womb, which, I mean, yeah, it's a Purity Ring album. It's okay. Sounds nice. Very pretty. Not much else to say about it. The new Enter Shikari project, Nothing is True and Everything is Possible. I've kind of been in a weird place with Enter Shikari with every album following their masterpiece, A Flash Flood of Color. This one, it's not as, like, boring as some of their as the past couple of records. It's not great or anything, but there's at least still, like, a decent energy and a couple of really solid jams here and there. Tina especially being one of the best things they've honestly written in a long-ass time. Shabazz Palaces with the Dawn of Diamond Dreams. I still do not completely understand how the inside of Ishmael Butler's mind works, but it is a very intriguing place all the same. And yeah, I might like this album a little bit better than the duology of Quasar's albums, but those first two, man, those are still like the peak for me. August Burns Red with their newest album, Guardians, and, you know, I liked it better than I was expecting. It brings the usual surprisingly technical sense of modern metalcore that puts them above a lot of other similar bands of their ilk. I do think the album suffers a bit from the production maybe being a bit too thin. If you're going to bring, like, huge chugging riffs and, you know, sick drums and just a generally aggressive demeanor like this, you do need to have a bit more body to how everything is produced, to the tones and everything. But it's not bad or anything. And then, of course, the last of my quick round picks, Testament with Titans of Creation. I mean, there's not much else you could say at this point. Testament's legacy is pretty much secure, so the goodness of any new album kind of doesn't matter at that point, although for what it's worth, this is another pretty good Testament album, doing what Testament does best, delivering some truly massive, shall we say, titanic riffs and drums and vocals, and just generally asserting their position as one of the essential pillars of the thrash genre. But they do, man, and hopefully everyone is in that band and all their road crew is having a solid path to recovery from COVID-19. And now that does it for the quick round, and to move on to the lowlights. I got two here to talk about. The first, not much to say because that's just kind of how empty and nothing it is. The new Strokes album, The New Abnormal, which I guess I should be glad I stopped paying much consistent attention to them after Angles, because, like, this really is nothing. Like, there's not much to say because it's not really doing anything. Like, it's pretty much boilerplate contemporary indie rock, except with plenty of a contemporary synth production and shit that pretty much just makes it generic indie synth pop rock. It, like, there's not even much of an identity to what they're doing with those styles. Like, this basically kind of feels like it could be like an Of Montreal album, but with way less identity. And oh dear god, that fucking annoying synth riff on Brooklyn Bridge to Chorus. What the fuck? Sounds like Chopsticks, but even more annoying. The pseudo-John Hughes 80s new wave vibes of Bad Decisions is easily the best thing that the album has going for it, but other than that, you can pretty much discard the entirety of this record. It's just kind of a waste of time. And speaking of waste of time, and you have no idea how much it pains me to say that with this band, yeah, I really wasn't feeling much the new Nightwish album, Human, something, something, musical symbol, I think that's a coda, or what the proper term is. Anyway, Human Nature, with that weird stylization. Like, okay, I've made this clear before. I like Nightwish, and I don't really care how much of a dork that makes me sound. Call me that, you know, all you want. I like what I like. I like Nightwish. You know, Imaginarium for me is still, like, one of the best things that came out the last decade, but, like, what happened on this record? Like, the album opener music, it just takes forever to get started. Like, if this was a short, punchy orchestral intro, fine, no problems. But, like, it's a track that's 7.5 minutes, and the main body of it doesn't even really start until about, like, the 3-minute mark. And even then, the full band doesn't even start until about 5 minutes in for a song that's ultimately just a generic, hey, music is great and cool and awesome. And it's like, you know, if I want that, I could just listen to Spirit of Radio or something. Then it follows with the first major single, Noise, which is at least a bit more of an actual song. It's got a solid enough beat and feels more like typical good Nightwish, with that really dramatic orchestral string work, really heavy drums and bass, etc. Just that really heavy distortion in the guitar riffs, you know, it's a solid song. Shoemaker is essentially a song that's like done before it hits the 4-minute mark, and while it does have some decent metal bits here and there, there's that really extended vocal choir outro that, I don't know, something about it just here just feels like it's unnecessary. Of course, we talked about Harvest before, which is just a By Numbers folk metal tune that again feels weirdly filler-ish. Pan is the other track from here that, if you ask me, I'd say was like really good on par with Noise. It picks up the pace a bit and has some nice meaty groovage to it. But then How's the Heart feels more like filler. Same with the following track, Procession. Tribal is a track name that's just really on the nose, especially in regards to its drum rhythm sounding, well, tribal, and these really aggressive lo-fi vocal chants. And even as one of the heavier jams on the record, you still get the sense that a lot of this just feels weirdly padded. Like, they're not using any of the time efficiently. It's just kind of like marking down time because they had to record something. Oh, and let's not forget the entire back half of the record, because last I checked, this is a two-disc affair. It's this orchestral suite called All the Works of Nature Which Adorn the World that, honestly, again, feels less like an attempt at a full-on orchestrated thing like they've done in the past before to much better effect than here, and just a way to artificially extend the runtime of the album to a really annoying degree. It's like, there's not even much of a, like, flow as far as, like, a lot of it just tries to sound like very pretty nature sounds with maybe some occasional bursts of more epic symphonic, you know, kind of swelling into something grander, but, like, I don't know, like, this album is, it's not the most incompetent record I've ever heard, but a lot of it just feels, like, bizarrely phoned in. I mean, if you need an example of just, like, to just kind of tell you what the mindset is here, there is a spoken word recitation of the famous Pale Blue Dot monologue given by famed scientist Carl Sagan. And I gotta tell you, listening to it here, it is easily the most pretentious thing to ever be associated with Carl Sagan since Neil deGrasse Tyson did that Cosmos revival.
Dream Theater did it better.
You know what? Yeah, they did. And look, I don't want to bash Nightwish. I know they're like an easy target for like a lot of metal critics and snobs and whatnot, but like, I'm not trying to feed into that, but it's like, guys, y'all aren't giving me anything to work with. Like, what happened to the Nightwish that wrote Imaginarium? You know, aside from the fact that apparently y'all felt it necessary to kick out the vocalist then and replace her with Floor Jansen, who I feel like is probably not getting paid enough to sing on this, or... Now that I think about it, I don't think I listened to the previous album she did with them either, which I heard was arguably just as pretentious. Oh, dear lord. I get the feeling that there's someone in the band who's, taking a piss in the fucking punch bowl. I don't want to know who. But, yeah, this is just... Yeah, this is one of the most disappointing records I've heard in a while. Just... Meh. And that is basically about it for me and all the albums I heard. Of course, as always, if you're interested, there'll be a playlist in the description where you can listen to choice cuts from the albums that we liked, because we're not going to subject you to the albums we disliked. Of course, be sure to, you know, follow us on Twitter at Surarezo, likes on Facebook. Be sure to visit the website surarezolution.com for, you know, written articles, this podcast, the other podcast. As always, shout out to the producer, Mr. E, for graciously letting me use his music for the podcast. Links to his shit down in the description. Well, thank you for joining in for the usual monthly madness. We'll, of course, be back with our usual weekly bullshit as it's getting impacted by the plague because it's affecting everything still for fuck knows how long. God damn it. And, yeah, until next time. Seriously, what the fuck kind of name is that? Name him Steve!
Rich white people.
Actually, I can tell you it's meant to be X-A-12. Yes, really.